Hi, I'm Jesse Hirsch. Welcome to the Future Herd. Early on in this conversation with Todd Orman, he reframes the future of agriculture in disarmingly simple terms. It's not something arriving, it's something we're already inside. That perspective anchors a focused discussion on where Canada's agri-food system actually struggles. From his role at Olds College, Todd sits between research, industry, and the farm. And what he describes is a persistent gap between innovation and adoption. Technologies exist, but getting them into real-world use, trusted, tested, and practical, is where the system often breaks down. This episode is less about hype and more about infrastructure. The role of applied institutions, the importance of validation at farm scale, and the growing need to align skills, data, and coordination across the entire sector. At its core, this is a conversation about what it takes to make innovation real and why that work is still unfinished. But more importantly, why Canada needs Olds College and the type of applied research institutions that it represents. Todd, welcome to the Future Herd.
Thank you. Looking forward to the conversation, Jesse.
Now, the first question I love to throw at people, a little abstract, a little broad, but kind of orients us in terms of the project of the Future Herd. What does the future mean to you?
The future means to me, I guess for me, the future is a little bit like the past. I honestly think the world is continually changing. So I don't really look at the future any different than I look at the past. You know, I think people look for things from a sometimes wanting a static perspective. I've never really felt that. For me, the future is never too scary because it's just what I've experienced in the past.
Right on. And ironically, you've just outed yourself as a leader because very few people are uncomfortable with that kind of uncertainty. And in fact, there are a lot of leaders who are uncomfortable with that uncertainty. So I feel validated already that we've got you here on the Future Herd. And in looking at your past, leadership has been a through line. I mean, it almost seems that throughout your professional career, you found yourself in various kind of positions of responsibility, positions of leadership. But before we talk about Olds College, it strikes me that your background is not necessarily that of the academic sector or that of the research sector, in that you're pretty diverse. You've been able to wear a few different kinds of hats that I suspect gives you perhaps a unique perspective on the agri-food sector as a whole.
Yeah, and I can't say, Jesse, that I look forward, and I can't say it was a planned event. It's a combination, honestly, of personal pieces and where the world took me. But you are right. I'm not a traditional academic. Most of my career has been in industry. You know, it goes back to I did a master's degree at University of Guelph. You know, I was a farmer at one point as well, and down in Foremost, Alberta, and technically my tax return says I'm still a farmer. But when I got out of university, you know, we moved to Manitoba was my first role, and I was with a chem company, and I enjoyed that. But that was back when we probably had 8 or 9 chem companies, right? And the world changed, and we did some consolidations and some moves, and they moved me from Brandon, Manitoba to Saskatchewan, and then they wanted to move me to Ontario. And my wife said, we don't move back east anymore. We only move west. And so to that end, I followed a boss back to Brandon, Manitoba, because that was closer. My wife was comfortable with it, and I worked for a company called United Grain Growers. They, too, were doing restructuring. Those were the days of shutting down and restructuring elevators. And they moved me here to Olds, Alberta in 1998. And I did my job here. I restructured the region and closed down elevators. And then they wanted to move me after that. My wife reminded me again, we don't move east. We are now back in Alberta. So I did about 25 years of commuting. And in that time, did some work with AdFarm and enjoyed that work with AdFarm. Had great clients like Dow AgroSciences, which is now Corteva and Agrium. But I wanted to be a client. So then I got recruited by Syngenta and I got a good 9 years there and did various roles. And they too wanted to move me to, you know, places like Switzerland and Singapore. And my wife reminded me again that we don't do that. So I then, you know, went from, I did a great 9 years, as much as I could at Syngenta, and I got to be a portfolio manager for North America for cereals. And I learned a lot there, to be honest. But I wanted to have a little bit more challenge. So then I got recruited into UFA. I ran their ag division for about 3 years, had three different CEOs, and then went into a really interesting phase where, just to be a little bit more personal, had some interesting life changes too. We lost, my wife had cancer, we lost a son. It was a very challenging time period. And I went for some more challenging things. An old boss from Syngenta invited me to go to Farmer's Edge. I did that for about a little over two years, helped launch Farm Command in Australia, Russia, Brazil, the US. But again, with some of those personal issues, we kind of went and got a job with TELUS. And that too was an exceptionally interesting time where, you know, I was our first ag hire with TELUS. And then I helped develop TELUS Ag. And I think when I left, we had 1,600 employees working in, or 15, selling in basically 50 countries, but working in 10. And so, but then after all that, I actually got a job here back in Olds, Alberta. So then I went to the college, and I honestly went to Olds College because it was agriculture, right? I don't know if I would have gone to any other post-secondary because it really wasn't I like ag. It's who I am. It's what's grounded me. And so that's why I ended up here. And to be honest, even there too, Jesse, I started with the thought that I was going to slow down a little bit because I did some crazy things and I started out managing partnerships, but the world changes here too. And so you adapt and you take on a few more things. And I inherited a much broader portfolio in external relations. And I also grabbed a hold of the research more because not my, that I'm a researcher, but because of my background, I understood the use cases and the network in there. And so that's how I got to where I'm at. It's a long story, Jesse. I don't know if that's what you were looking for, but that's my background.
It was a great setup because it gives me a bunch of threads that I can pull over the course of our conversation. I definitely want to talk about the technology stuff and the innovation, the kind of, you know, making these things happen. To your point about it takes a network, right? It's, you know, it's not just about research in isolation. It's about getting that research into the field, into the barn, into people's hands. But I think to your point about your wife's, you know, we're only going west, not east. You know, we are starting off as a podcast based in Ontario, and
I love Ontario. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I love going to Guelph. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And one of my priorities has been to reach out to folks like yourself, to reach out to Westerners, because I think folks here in Ontario don't appreciate the innovation, the expertise, the amazing things that are going on out there. And Olds College is a great example, because I know of Olds College because I'm a nerd who's into smart farms, right? And I'm kind of paying attention to what's happening across the country. But I was talking to someone this morning and I was excited. I said, hey, I'm going to talk to someone from Olds College. And they're like, what's that? And I was shocked. And I think part of it is credit to Guelph that they do kind of, you know, dominate people's attention here in central Canada and eastern Canada. But very briefly, give us a breakdown of Olds College and the phenomenal things that are going on there. It's an engine of innovation in Western Canada and, to your larger point, all around the world when you think about where some of that innovation ends up going once it's developed here at home.
Yeah, Olds College is a bit unique, right? And it's rooted in agriculture. In fact, its original intent, going back to 1913, it was a research farm to help teach basically Europeans how to farm. The president was the farm manager back in the day because that was his role, was to basically manage the farm. And so that was our intent going back to 1913. And to be honest, right now, like University of Guelph is an excellent, that's where I went to school for my master's, an excellent school. But even there too, University of Guelph has other things other than agriculture, right? But Olds College is really focused in on ag. You know, like most colleges or universities, in like post-secondaries, I would say are kind of horizontal in nature, right? They look at the region they're in and they build their solutions around that region. We are much more a vertical nature. We focus on ag, not so much in this geography, but in a broader piece. And to be honest, we're probably a little bit more Western Canadian focused. We don't do anything on corn and beans, right? It is cereals, canola, pulses, and beef. And to that end, what makes the college a bit unique is the physical infrastructure that dates back to that time in, you know, 1913. At one time, there used to be four institutions here in Alberta that were part of the Department of Agriculture, and then they moved into post-secondary. And so that ag piece we kind of always kept with us, and it means that we are in a community that's pretty close to Calgary, about 40 minutes from Calgary, but still rural. So we have 3,000 acres of farmland. You know, we have a 1,000-head feedlot. We have 2,000 square feet of greenhouses. We have 135 head of cattle. We have 100 sheep. And we'll have up to 70 or 80 horses on campus at any one time, right? And so we do both education and research at scale. And so that's, you know, and so that's kind of harder and harder to do, right? And so even though we do like definitely innovation directly ourselves, we also partner with universities. We have a PhD student right now from University of Guelph on our campus looking at emissions. And it's a little bit because we have that physical infrastructure to do that. And we will partner both with universities and with industry to physically work with industry and institutions to do things at scale. Because you can't really do that when you've got a lot of cement around you.
Well, and, you know, before we get into the research piece, you kind of evoked the skills and training, right? The, you know, I've always been more a fan of applied research than kind of the academic abstract stuff, because you can give it into people's hands. You can be training workers. You can be implementing it into the farm. You hear a lot in the agricultural sector about labor shortages, especially now that technology is playing a bigger role, about the need to upgrade skills. I'm curious kind of where you yourself as a leader, but as an institution, how you guys are tackling that and how you're really trying to address this growing need to make sure that the skills available to the workforce, but also required by the sector, are kind of part of the pipeline.
Yeah. So one of the strengths and weaknesses, honestly, of Olds College is that we're focused on agriculture. Like, you know, when you look at post-secondaries, what makes post-secondaries work sometimes, and I learned it was a term called chalk and talk, where you put 200 to 300 kids in front of a room and one instructor, that's affordable. It's not as affordable when you have to have a lab of a field and a barn and all these other pieces, right? And it's also a bit of a challenge because the way funding comes to universities and colleges is really by the number of students. And honestly, in ag, as things have gotten larger and more scaled, you have a more complex workforce, but less and less people. And so right now, 94% of our grads have a job within 6 months. We have zero issues finding jobs for our students. We have an issue with finding students. Yeah. And but 1.5 to 1.7% of the population is now still in agriculture. And so our recruitment, which used to be really, really focused on Alberta, continues to expand. I mean, over the, you know, last holidays, I mean, I spent time talking to us, we're having lunch with a student from Ontario, right? Because we do have to go broader and broader in those rural communities. But longer term, we know that we're also going to have to start thinking about urban. And, you know, in the past, like even my background growing up on a farm and, you know, near Foremost, Alberta, I could have went to school to anywhere and got the additional skill sets and then started working in industry. But I do think in the future, we're going to have to think about urban populations, people that are two or three generations removed from the farm, and think about introducing them to ag. Now, I remember sending my son down to the farm for a harvest, you know, and asking what his key learning was. And he threw at me, he was surprised that that no one watched clocks. They got up in the morning, they got in the combine when they could, they combined until they could, and they stopped, and they just got it done that way. That threw him off. I never thought about it that way, but growing up on a farm, that was pretty I just knew why that was. But for him, it was a complete learning. So some of those things that you think as an Aggie are really simple are not. Like just even being exposed to large animals like cattle, or the size and complexity of equipment, the seasonality of the industry. So those are also why I think it's really important to have places like Olds College, because that future workforce may not be coming from the farm. 63 to 70% of our grads don't necessarily go back to the farm. They go back to industry because farms are getting so large and complex. You need this complex industry around it to make it work. And so part of our things that we are doing is looking at how do we engage urban populations and actually try to make ag sexy.
I think you just hit that right out of the park. I think that's an absolutely brilliant insight. And I want to kind of get you to double down on that, but without focusing exclusively on the urban, because I think what you're describing applies to both rural and urban, which is the sector is changing. The jobs and the roles in the sector are changing. And it requires, in many cases, a higher level of literacy and a different culture. The foundation of that culture is still rural, to your point of you just go and get the job done, right? You're not worried about other constraints. But to your other point, it might be people who have a data science background. It might be people who have a robotics background. You know, there are different skill sets that are in high demand within agriculture that I think, to your point, Olds College is in a unique position to kind of train people for. I would love to hear your thoughts. How are you reaching or trying to reach some of those urban folks? I share the hypothesis in the sense that when I talk to friends who live in cities, they hate their jobs. They're envious of what I'm doing and they just can't figure out how to get into it. You know, and it's because they don't know Olds College, but they don't see the on-ramp to get into what I think is an exciting and dynamic sector. So I'd love to hear more of your thoughts as to where you think that opportunity lies.
So for us right now, one of the things we are doing is by putting a little bit more emphasis on markets like Calgary, right? Calgary is a city of 1.2 million people, and it does have a very strong agricultural culture, right? Or, you know, they went to time, I think they used to call Calgary Cowtown. So at least they see themselves kind of stepped into that area of ag. So we've done things like create strategic partnerships with the Calgary Stampede. Even the Calgary Stampede, too, sees itself as someone that has to promote rural lifestyle. And so, you know, we're thinking about how we do things with Calgary Stampede, you know, to kind of promote then that ag literacy. But there is a real strong misunderstanding of what ag is. And I think, and the nuance there, too, Jesse, is that it goes both ways. Do you know what I mean? Like, Olds is a little bit unique because we're 9,000 people. So we are big enough that we won't scare an urban person away, and we're small enough that someone from a small town isn't scared as well. So it's a nice blend. But we do have to foster those conversations, because I do find, you know, like the conversation around environment, for example, right? When I hear things, people have that conversation, and you get into that with a rural person, and you go into some of the terms that are being utilized, regenerative ag. You know, you can see the hair on Aggie's pieces kind of go up, right? But if you say the term soil health, now you're not in any problem, right? And so it's a little bit trying to find that balance, because they're not as far apart as they think they are. But there really is a bit of that, those conversations. So we do a lot of tours here. We do engage in that market. You know, like we've recently did an initiative with Calgary Economic Development and Calgary Stampede around AgSphere. The intent there is to help promote and develop and support, you know, ag technology within the region. We are working with our continuing education group to establish, you know, more Calgary-based education pieces. So that focus in that particular market is probably our first real push. Now, the majority of our students are still coming from the rural areas, and I don't see that changing in the next 4 to 5 years. But there too, I think there's a bit of a place for Olds College to introduce those rural to urban and vice versa.
And this is where I would also say that, you know, Toronto, certainly when I was growing up there, was called Hogtown. So I wouldn't neglect that either as a long term a market to focus on, in part because I think there is certainly amongst younger generations, but even amongst those slightly older, a desire to get out of the city, a desire to have what you kind of described as the Goldilocks of Olds, Alberta, where it's not too big and not too small. It's kind of just right.
It's close to an urban market, but it's still rural, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of our strengths, yeah.
I want to use that as a segue to get in to the research piece because, you know, on the one hand, we're sort of talking about skills and skills development, but having a farm, having the facilities you guys have, you know, means that you're not just studying textbooks, you're actually getting your hands dirty. You're actually kind of getting involved. And you alluded to the idea that, you know, agriculture as a whole, I think, is hugely misunderstood, and misunderstood even by people who are within agriculture itself, to your point about, you know, sustainability might turn them off, or regenerative ag might turn them off, but soil health or environmental stewardship, that's totally cool. Like, it really does come down to framing. What role does research play in facilitating that curiosity, facilitating that kind of discovery? Like, obviously, I do want to talk about innovation, but I kind of feel there's a bridge here around winning those hearts and minds and getting people to realize that agriculture today is really not what people think it is, that it is really exciting, really high tech, and filled with all sorts of opportunities, both economic and research. Again, I know these things, but I think a lot of people listening may not, or may take them for granted. So I'd love to hear you kind of connect the dots here.
So there's a lot there to even unpack. So when you think about research, and even myself, because you heard my background, was not a traditional research, had to do a bit of learning of what research is and some of these terms. So discovery research, which you see most often at universities, or it comes from large global companies, is not really what we do. Now, we enable it. This is why we do have project with UOC and you have University of Guelph and University of Alberta, but they may be driving something. And that's 10, 15 years in the making. And that's, you know, the discovery piece. And there's a place for it. And then there's applied research. And the applied research, too, I find has two different elements into it, right? So traditionally, you have extension type research, which is a little bit about trying new practices and then communicating that into the community, right? And then you have applied research that's much more economic development in nature. And that tends to be working with companies to validate and test their IP and help get that to market. And so the latter two is where we spend most of our time. Yes, we do enable discovery with other institutions, but really it's where we, and then even there too, I would say more and more what we do is around economic development. Now, to your point, Jesse, I do think there's a bit of extension services that we should be leveraging for urban audiences. There's just no money to support that, to be honest. Now, we do tours and things like that, but honestly, that's on the back of our dime. There's no, we get no resources for that, right? And then the traditional, so if you think of it really back, the traditional way that ag used to be was you'd have dedicated agricultural institutions and global companies doing discovery, right? And then dedicated agricultural institutions doing extension work, and then bringing that down to the farm. That world is starting to dissipate and change. I think over time we've learned that there's always a really solid place for global companies in Canada to bring technology, but that means we're going to be a laggard because they develop for what's a larger market, and we're not the larger market. So we'll be a laggard for technology coming from global companies. At the same time, honestly, we have reduce significantly the amount of research that goes into agriculture, right? I think it's around 21% since 1985, if I remember the stat correctly. And you're seeing that cut in those areas. So that's a little bit of a makes me a bit nervous, right? Now, when it looks at the extension work going towards farmers, I think there too things are changing as farms getting larger, more sophisticated. To be honest, what I do or we do here on our farm and show how, you know, we would do a fertilizer application may or may not apply to someone 30 miles down the road. As systems have gotten larger and more digital in nature and more sophisticated, and if you've got a good agronomist on the farm, you're going to probably know your farm better than what we're going to know it. And so mm-hmm. I think more and more the extension side is being transmitted a little bit to the larger farm. Now, not all farms have that capability, but most production today, because even in my time at Syngenta, I would say 90% of our sales came from 10% of the population, and they would be capable of doing that, have that capability to do that extension work. So really now it becomes much more focused in on economic development. And I think, honestly, that's very critical because we are too disparate in that front, because if Canada is going to remain competitive, we really do need to find the technologies and the ways of working that fit local geographies. Because ag is a unique system where, well, yes, it's global. You can use an active ingredient across the globe. You can use a combine-based platform across the globe, and maybe a seeder. There are uniquenesses in each geography that you do need to customize and develop technology. And that is really where we really do need applied research to focus in on. And that 100%. Is a little bit more challenging, right? And so for us, the ability, we would have like 69 or 70 different projects going on at any one time. And we're testing and validating technology. And and the other nuance here too, Jesse, you may not know, colleges are much more applied than universities, right? But we get no money for research. So when you get a student at a university, you usually get money for teaching and money for research. Here we don't. We just get money for teaching. So all our projects tend to be 3 years in scope, and it's a combination of industry dollars, dollars from the province, and dollars from the feds. And we're now about 20 to 40% of, well, it's probably getting closer to 40% now, of our income comes directly from industry. Now, the challenge with that, though, too, just to be upfront with you, is they're usually 2 to 3 year projects. So think about that. I got to hope that I got another project coming down the pipeline for the team, or that team goes away. So that's a bit of a struggle, too.
Although it does speak, I think, and this is a self-evident to say, that in the era of the internet, it's the connections that matter most, right? And to your point about a lot of the innovation is happening out on these larger operations, or from my perspective, even happening amongst entrepreneurs who are doing startups, and to have a facility like Olds where they can validate, where they can test, where they can sort of meet each other. I mean, it is, in my view, tragic that the business model doesn't reward you for that, but you still have to, you know, focus on getting kind of bodies on campus when the value, I believe, that part of what you're bringing is the bridge that connects industry when they would otherwise be isolated, right? By giving them a place to come and do this research, it creates a kind of innovation culture unto itself. So part of the metaphor of the future herd is we get to build momentum by anticipating this future need and kind of trying to run ahead of these problems. So this is where I get to say, all right, Todd, let's imagine policy here. What are the ways in which, whether on a provincial level, whether on a federal level, that we could make the type of applied research, make the type of extension and connectivity that you're doing through your own hustle, through your own gumption? How do we institutionalize that so, to your point, it's less precarious and more reliable, so you can not only build these teams but have nerds in Toronto going, oh, I got to get me accepted to Olds because that's where my career is going to take off, because that's where the global ag industry is paying attention to where this innovation is happening. Again, to be blue sky, but I'd love to get a little prescriptive here in terms of what are the types of policy shifts that would alleviate some of the stresses that clearly you face in putting all this together.
So I'll go a little bit micro and macro, right, in this conversation, I guess. But, you know, we are a little bit fragmented. You know, when as we kind of dismantle that, you know, Ag Canada infrastructure and those other pieces, because I think there was probably 20, 30 years ago this thought that global companies were going to take care of us. Like, you know, it's $210 million to create an active ingredient, hundreds of million dollars, 9 years for a seed variety. You know, those aren't public dollars, right? And so let's let the industry do that and drive it. But what I guess we missed was that global companies are going to focus on markets that are the most profitable for them. And we are not always going to be the most profitable market. And in some cases, we have structural issues with bin run seed and areas like that. Well, there's no money in it, so they're not going to invest in it. Right. So I think we missed that piece. And as we dismantled some of our research capabilities, some of those things were not going to fill the gap. So we have this right now separated industry research pieces, right? And so we're not like Olds College is a unique entity. And even though we collaborate a lot with University of Guelph and University of Alberta and others, we're not necessarily connected like the old systems were. And so there, we do have to think through how we connect those systems, because even though I know things have to be tested regionally, to be profitable, they need to scale much more across the country. So we need a better way to kind of do that. And there are some initiatives like with FCC, where they are, you know, developing connections between our smart farm and not even post-secondary smart farm, but other smart farms across the country, and then also developing a on-ground testing for farmers. So we need more of that. Like, we just need more of that connectivity that kind of works, and the common ways of working instead of always working separately. And there's, and that is structural. And so honestly, Jesse, I think that does come from Paul. But yeah, we will, Olds College will work with anybody, but we do not have the structures in place that drive that or fund that connectivity in a larger way. And organizations like FCC are trying that, but we're not there yet. So I do think that's one of the key things we have to look at. But even backing up there, the voice of the farm is weaker today than it ever was. We just have less farmers, and we still have too many grower groups. And so that advocating of the farm and ranch piece needs a consolidated group. You know, like, it's not 13, it's over 400 grower groups, right? And so they all have similar messaging, but it's probably a structure based upon the 80s and 90s. You know, you go to a country like Ireland, and they've got one. Do you know what I mean? And when I had when I had some research on this and some conversations with people, one individual was telling me that, well, two or three people told me, right now the Minister of Agriculture is the most solicited ministry in the government. Right? And that should not be the case. And it's just because we're too fractured. So first off, I do think we need to relook at that to give farmers a better voice. Because I think that's what's going to drive the advocacy for these things. Because without it, I don't think we're going to get policy to change without someone fighting for it. The second, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
Yeah, so that's one thing I think we have to look at. And then the other thing we have to recognize is this uniqueness of global players are going to be really important for us, but they're not going to fill all the gaps. So we really do have to think about how we increase intellectual property for smaller companies and drive that. So I'm not too sure if the model we have today for bin run seed, for example, is sustainable, because I don't see governments supporting it longer term. There just isn't money there. And as populations have become more and more urban, they're thinking about food, not agriculture. So those base infrastructures that we would have taken for granted, that people understood we should invest in, they just don't know, because they don't know. That's what it comes down to,
right? And self-servingly, that is absolutely one of the agendas of this podcast, because I think it's absolutely unacceptable that we allow the voting public to be so ignorant, if not misinformed, about the agricultural sector and the agri-food sector. And I do very much want to have folks like you come on and have great conversations like this, where people can start understanding it. And this is where I have to indulge in my inner nerd prepared only because I can throw this question at you with the confidence that you're not going to freak out when I do so, because I'm relatively new to agriculture. You know, this is maybe my 8th year farming. My background is in technology. My background is in the internet. That's kind of why I got into agriculture, because to the point of applied research, it seemed like a great place for me to be able to play with the toys I want to play with and eat the results. But I am kind of shocked at how a huge swath of the agricultural sectoral leadership does not recognize the tsunami of technology that is currently sweeping the world. And there's lots of ways to look at it. I'm curious, you know, I could ask the easy question, which is what role does technological change play in agriculture? But I think I'm going to double down, because this has been such an amazing conversation. And the ideas that you've brought have really, I think, helped me better understand the opportunities forward, hopefully our audience as well. How do we respond to the rate of technological change? How do we take a diverse sector of large operators, small operators, you know, well-resourced organizations that are stretched thin, and to your point, global organizations that want to do well, that are here to partner with us? But it seems to me the rate of technological change is the big variable, the big stress factor. And because of your professional background, I suspect you've thought about this a lot. That's a big wind up for the pitch. But Todd, I'm curious about your thoughts.
Okay, so I may be a little bit on a different perspective than some on this one, right? And I'll challenge a little bit that piece around ag adopting technology. Because I think, again, what a lot of people look at is farms as a whole. And maybe because of my time in the commercial sector, I would look at acres and cows. And I would look at how to influence acres and cows, because in the world of agriculture, there are actually globally more people that are obese than there are hungry. And it's because, quite candidly, we've been very good at increasing production. And if you look at acres, the vast majority of acres adopt technology. And it's because farms are getting larger and more complex. And it's the same thing when you start looking at the larger, more complex operations. There's a new film coming out. If you see it, get a chance, Jesse, it'll be coming out soon. It's called A World Without Cows. And it's an interesting perspective, too, where it talks about India and Brazil having the most cows, but the most beef still gets produced in the United States. And it's because it is more efficient to put a cow through a feedlot and leverage the best feeds and everything else to create it. And so, personally, I do think a larger, more corporate world of ag will serve a better industry, as because we do have to think through how we deal with future labor needs, and we do have to think about how we deal with future, you know, air environmental needs. And honestly, a larger, more complex business-like organization does do that. And I think as you see farms get larger and more complex, they do adapt technology. I mean, it's $1.2 million base cost for a John Deere X Series combine. It's got 32 onboard computer systems. It's $1.7 million with the header. In Western Canada, that's a Ford, a 5,000-acre machine, right? So you've got to have size and scale and complexity of the organization that does that. And so I do think, and I remember having Robert Angelic on our farm here. He's the largest landowner, and walking around, going through the stats that 30% of the farms do precision agriculture technology, and he said, no, they don't. 80 to 90% do. Because guess what? Probably 80 to 90% of his renters do that because they're the large corporate farm. And so I do think what we need, honestly, is that continued path of larger, more sophisticated units. Because I think, honestly, that is better for labor, that's better for food production, that's better for environmental sustainability. But we also have to recognize we have to fund that model a little bit differently, too. Because the other uniqueness of that is what I described earlier. We're always going to produce more per animal and more per acre, which also increases GDP. But it is going to be through a select less and less. And we're still not, compared to other industries, anywhere near consolidation. there are still 60,000 farms. I would probably say, like canola, cereal, pulse, crop farms, there's probably about 12,000 that really do the vast majority of production across Canada. That's still a lot.
And you know, this, you alluded to my next question earlier when you talked about all the different growers groups and the fragmented voices that, you know, overload the average ag minister, making them kind of unresponsive or perhaps not even able to listen to people's concerns. So within that kind of vision of innovation that you offered, what are the leadership challenges? Like, obviously being heard is one of them, right? Given all the competing voices, but what would be the advice that you'd have to the young leader kind of moving through the ranks of the industry, you know, because I think your answer in terms of the rate of technological change requires resources at scale. So what are the leadership challenges, you know, that come in that environment? And to something you said earlier, how do we ensure that Canadian angle, that Canadian need, that uniqueness is embedded into that larger global innovation process?
And this goes back to some of the conversations we had around those cultural things. Like, so Jesse, your background, I speak more and more to all the time. And honestly, if I'm looking to leaderships that are now making differences, so I look at Justine Hendricks again from FCC. She is not a traditional Aggie, but she's making a significant difference in the world of agriculture. And so we have to, and there's good reasons to embrace that non-agricultural background coming into play. Now, I think we also have to recognize, though, that my understanding of agriculture and the understanding of food are a bit unique. Ag is a game of commodity production. It is size and scale and efficiency, because really in agriculture, you're, for the most part, producing ingredients, not food. It's not until you go into some level of processing and then packaging that you get into food. And you also got to remember that most people and consumers, food is an experience. It's grocery stores, it's restaurants, it's unique. It's far from mass production. And so investments in both those things are a little bit different, right? But if you're going to be relevant in ag, you're going to have to figure out how you connect to food. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think we're going to see that a majority of Canadians recognize or understand agriculture, but they understand food. So we are going to have to think about how strategically we are looking at food security and how we drive that. And that food security in Canada may be a bit different than, I'd say, food security in other places, because it does mean that we're going to have very significant other commodities that we can trade to build resources and resilience back and forth so that we can get the other things we can get. Now, maybe in the future, controlled environmental ag will help us grow pineapples, but it's not going to be quick.
And I'm thoroughly enjoying our conversation today, because I love the way in which you're kind of, to the metaphor of the future herd, thinking ahead on a lot of these issues. To your last point, is Olds looking at kind of a processing value add, the broader food side of the agri-food sector?
We are. Now, so that we had to here too define that our world is agriculture and agri-food, right? And so we look at technology within that area, and that gives us that ability to also focus in on food. But we're probably going to come from the lens of primary production up, not food back. Mm-hmm. And there are some things here on the campus that are really unique. We have a national meat program that literally we can raise a cow here on campus. We can put it through the feedlot, butcher it, cut it up, put it into our retail store. No other place in North America can do that.
No one
can do that. And that's a program that focuses in on kids from 16-year-old to 73-year-olds. Like, it's sometimes people that are looking for a second career. So we are looking at that.
And to our earlier point, I know a lot of people in Toronto who that vision would be very appealing to them. And it gets into, on some levels, to your point, the romanticization of food and the intellectualization of food. And I think to be involved in the entire process of the cow, from raising to processing to eating, is a very empowering process. And I think we take for granted that there's people who not only don't have access to it, wouldn't even even occur to them that it's an option. And it is, I think, really educationally empowering.
Yeah. Our instructor in that area, when he brought the deputy minister, did a tour. He asked a question, compared it to another institution. He said, that institution does charcuterie boards. We do meat.
Excellent analogy. Now, we are almost out of time, and two last questions that I have to get in. The second last is very open-ended. Is there anything that we haven't touched upon today that you really think is worth bringing up, either in terms of Olds College or in terms of this really, I think, forward-looking view of where the sector's going and how we can best reap the opportunities?
We were kind of touching on the last little bit, but I do think we need to have that conversation, how we can look at agriculture and food as strategic. Now, you got to remember, Canada is the second largest country in the world, but we are a population the size of one Asian city. So it does allow us, just like energy, to be a net provider of food globally. So while we're a very small market globally, roughly about 5 to 7% of the market for example, inputs, we typically rank in the top four to five in terms of export. And it's because of this uniqueness. Now, but we're falling behind. And I do think we have to recognize the structural differences of agriculture. It's going to be a more consolidated industry going forward, and it has to. Which means funding it on mass scale by people is probably not the best way to do that. But we also have to recognize that funding dollars that go into agriculture will increase GDP by the very nature of what ag does.
Yeah, yeah.
And so linking us and resourcing us, like you're going to resource other things, I think hurts us.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a challenge I have with the post-secondary world a little bit, because it's really measured on the number of students you have, not necessarily on what you're delivering for an economic development. And here, I think we're doing a lot.
No, please go ahead. I'll let you finish. I'm getting too excited.
I think it's, again, going back to, we need a much stronger voice selling the fact that Canada can be very strategically a food superpower as well. And that food security, and then we also have to have our own populations in ag recognize that connection back and forth, right? So that engagement of urban audiences and that connection to more of the urban piece is really what's going to make us successful. But there's also this recognition from the urban world that this is really crucial for Canada's security.
And I have to express significant gratitude for your time, Todd, because you're stepping up in a way that I want to see more agricultural leaders do, which is to recognize this opportunity we have to be that food superpower, to think strategically about our sector and about our position in the world. We need more leaders thinking that way in the proactive sense. I'm prejudiced in thinking that it's part of your technology connection that have helped influence that sense of ambition. But realistically, it might also just be because you're a Westerner and you guys have that kind of go get them attitude. The last question I love to throw at guests, you've done this a little bit already, is the shout outs. Are there other leaders that inspire you, that you think are doing the right thing, that we should be paying attention to in terms of, you know, getting directions from when we think about a more strategic, certainly a more capable Canadian agri-food system?
Well, there are. I mentioned Justine. I've been really impressed with what Justine has done. And I honestly just like her. I don't, you know, you were saying the Western people have energy. No, like Justine has tons of energy, right? And so, you know, I've always been grateful for the work that she's been doing and how she's had FCC kind of step up and be a bit of a leader in this space, right? There's people like Kim McConnell. You know, I don't know if you know Kim McConnell, but he's been an advocate for agriculture for a long time. And he's a person that's, you know, driven sustainable beef and areas like that. And he just does it because, honestly, he's got a passion for ag. There are people like Sherry Copperform Barnes, who is the new chair for the Stampede. She's honestly engaging, you know, she's got real agricultural, rural sensibilities, and she is engaging urban audiences through the Calgary Stampede. And Joel, the president from the Stampede, he's an American. Don't hold that against him. But he's a real Aggie, And, you know, he's really trying to drive those pieces. So I do really respect, you know, those people that are trying to engage other audiences and trying to look more strategically across this area.
Right on, right on. I mean, it's very important for us, I think, to celebrate other leaders and to kind of, you know, spread attention and love, if only because, to use a technology metaphor, I kind of feel that, like Olds College as a whole, you guys are saying we need to upgrade. You know, we've got a solid foundation, we've got great roots, a great tradition, but we need to be upgrading so that we're better positioned to handle the changing nature of the global market and the shifting geopolitical environment. So thank you, Todd. Go ahead.
I also want to mention one other person, and I want to mention Senator Black, and that's a gentleman from Ontario. Senator Black is a strong advocate for agriculture and always has been. And so I really do appreciate the work that Senator Black continues to do to advocate around ag. So that's another person we should call out.
Right on. Awesome. Thanks, Todd. This has been fantastic.
Anytime.
If there's a through line in this conversation, it's that progress in agriculture doesn't hinge on breakthrough ideas alone. It depends on whether those ideas can actually be made to work on real farms under real conditions. Todd Orman brings us back to that reality. Innovation isn't scarce. What's scarce is alignment between institutions, technologies, producers, and of course, between ambition and execution. And that's where leadership increasingly matters, not just in setting direction, but in connecting the system so it can move. If this episode leaves you with anything, it's a sharper sense that the future of agriculture won't be decided in theory or in isolation. Rather, it will be built, tested, and proven step by step in places willing to do the hard work of making these things real. And Olds College is clearly one of those places. Thanks for listening to The Future Herd. We'll see you next time.